Krishna Book, Canto 13, Dwaraka, Chapter 58, Scene 8, Wife Number 8, Lakshmana. Thereafter, Krishna married a daughter of the king of the Madras province, and her name was Lakshmana. Lakshmana had all good qualities, and she was also forcibly married by Krishna, who took her in the same way that Garuda snatched the jar of nectar from the hands of the demons. Krishna kidnapped this girl in the presence of many other princes in the assembly of her Swayamvara. A Swayamvara is a ceremony in which the bride can select her own husband from an assembly of many princes. Now, Chapter 83, Scene 2, Part B, The Story of Lakshmana. When Lord Krishna was busy meeting various kinds of visitors, and while they were engaged in offering prayers to Lord Krishna, the female members of the Kuru dynasty and the Yadu dynasty took this opportunity of meeting one another and engaged in talk of Krishna's transcendental pastimes. The first inquiry was made by Queen Draupadi to the wives of Lord Krishna. "Will you please let us know how Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, accepted you as his wives and married you in pursuance of the marriage ceremonies of ordinary human beings?" And when it was her turn, Lakshmana said, "My dear Queen Draupadi, many times I heard the great sage Narada glorifying the pastimes of Lord Krishna. I became attracted to the lotus feet of Krishna when I heard Narada say that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, was also attracted to Krishna's lotus feet. And since then, I have always been thinking of Krishna, and thus my attraction for Krishna has increased. My dear queen, my father was very affectionate towards me, and when he understood that I was attracted to Krishna, he devised a plan. His plan was like that devised by your father. During the Swayamvara, the prospective bridegrooms had to pierce the eyes of a fish with their arrows. But the difference between the competition in your Swayamvara and mine was that in your case, the fish was hanging openly on the ceiling in clear view. But in my case, the fish was covered with a cloth and could only be seen by the reflection of the cloth in a pot of water. That was the special feature of my Swayamvara." The news of this device was spread all over the world, and when the princes heard of it, they arrived at my father's capital city from all directions, fully equipped with armor and guided by their military instructors. Each one of them desired to win me as his wife, and one after another they raised the bow and arrow which was left there for piercing the fish. Many could not even join the bowstring to the two ends of the bow, and without attempting to pierce the fish, they simply left the bow as it was and went away. With great difficulty, some of them drew the string from one end to the other, and being unable to tie the other end, they were suddenly knocked down by the spring-like bow. My dear Queen Draupadi, you will be surprised to know that at my Swayamvara meeting, there were many famous kings present. Heroes like Jarasandha, Ambashta, Shishupal, Bhimasena, Duryodhana, and Karna, of course, were able to string the bow, but they could not pierce the fish because it was covered, and they could not trace it out from the reflection. The celebrated hero of the Pandavas, Arjuna, was able to see the reflection of the fish on the water, but although with great caution, he traced out the location of the fish and shot an arrow, he did not pierce the fish in the right spot. At least his arrow touched the fish, and so he proved himself better than all other princes. All the princes who had tried to pierce the target were disappointed, being baffled in their attempts, and some of the candidates had even left the place without making an attempt. But when at last Lord Krishna took up the bow, he was able to tie the bowstring very easily, just as a child plays with a toy. Krishna placed the arrow, and looking only once at the reflection of the fish in the water, Lord Krishna shot the arrow, and the pierced fish immediately fell down. This victory of Lord Krishna was accomplished at noon, during the moment called Abhijit, which is astronomically calculated as auspicious. At that time, the vibration, Jai, Jai, was heard all over the world, and from the sky came sounds of drums beaten by the denizens of heaven. Great demigods were overwhelmed with joy and began to shower flowers upon the earth. And so at that time, I entered the arena of competition, and the ankle bells on my legs were sounding very melodiously as I walked. I was nicely dressed with new silken garments, and flowers were decorating my hair. And because of Lord Krishna's victory, I was in ecstatic joy, smiling very pleasingly. I was carrying in my hands a golden necklace bedecked with jewels, which glittered at intervals. My curling hair encircling my face was shining with a bright luster due to the reflection of my various rings. With my eyes blinking, I first of all observed all the princes present, and when I reached my lord, I very slowly placed the golden necklace upon his neck. As I have already informed you, from the very beginning, my mind had been attracted by Lord Krishna, and thus I considered the garlanding of Lord Krishna to be my great victory. As soon as I placed my garland on the neck of Lord Krishna, immediately there sounded the combined vibration of mridangas, patahas, conchels, drums, kettle drums, and other instruments, causing a tumultuous sound. And while the music played, expert male and female dancers began to dance, and singers began to sing sweetly. My dear Draupadi, when I accepted Lord Krishna as my worshipable husband, and Krishna also accepted me as his maidservant, there was a tumultuous roaring among the disappointed princes. All of them became very agitated because of their lusty desires. But without caring for them, my husband, in his form as the four-handed Narayana, immediately took me on his chariot, which was drawn by four excellent horses. Expecting opposition from the princes, Krishna armored himself and took up his bow named Sharanga, while our celebrated driver, Daruka, drove the beautiful chariot without a moment's delay toward the city of Dwaraka. Thus, in the presence of all the princes, I was carried away very quickly, exactly as a deer is carried away from the flock by a lion. However, some of the princes wanted to check our progress, and thus, equipped with proper weapons, they opposed us, just as dogs try to oppose the progressive march of a lion. But at that time, due to the arrows released by the Sharanga bow of Lord Krishna, some of the princes were cut on their left hands, some of them lost their legs, and some lost their heads and their lives, while others fled from the battlefield. The Supreme Personality of Godhead then entered the most celebrated city of the universe, Dwaraka. And as Krishna entered the city, he appeared like the shining sun. The whole city of Dwaraka was profusely decorated on that occasion. There were so many flags and festoons and gates all over Dwaraka that the sunshine could not even enter the city. I have already told you that my father was very much affectionate to me. So when he saw that my desire was fulfilled by getting Lord Krishna as my husband, in great happiness, my father began to distribute to his friends and relatives various kinds of gifts, such as valuable dresses, ornaments, bedsteads, and sitting carpets. Lord Krishna is always self-sufficient, and yet my father, out of his own accord, offered Krishna a dowry consisting of riches, soldiers, elephants, chariots, horses, and many rare and valuable weapons. My father presented all these to Lord Krishna with great enthusiasm. And so, my dear Queen Draupadi, at that time I could guess that in my previous life I must have performed some wonderfully pious activity. And as a result, I can, in this life, be one of the maidservants in the house of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The description of Krishna's marriage with the girls mentioned in these chapters is not sufficient, for Krishna had many other thousands of wives besides these eight principal queens. The other thousands of wives were accepted by Krishna after killing the demon named Bauma Asura. All these thousands of girls were held captive in the palace of Balmasura, and Krishna released them and then married them. Thus ends the narration of the marriage of the eighth queen of Krishna named Lakshmana. All glories to Krishna Book, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Idam te mukham bojam atyanta nilaya vritam kuntalai snigdha raktaischa gopya muhushchumbitam bimba raktadarang me manasya virastam alam laksha labhai. Idam te mukham bojam atyanta nilayar vritam kuntalai snigdha raktaischa gopya muhushchumbitam bimba raktadarang me manasya virastam alam laksha labhai. O Lord, your lotus face, encircled by locks of soft black hair, tinged with red, is kissed again and again by your mother, Yashoda. And your lips are reddish like the bimba fruit. May this beautiful vision of your lotus face be ever manifest in my heart, for thousands and thousands of other benedictions are of no use to me. The following are notes on this chapter from the various Vaishnava Acharyas. Arjuna is famous as the most expert bowman. So why then could Arjuna not hit the fish target at Srimati Lakshmana's Swayamvara ceremony, just as he had done once before to win Draupadi? Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the target at Draupadi Swayamvara had been covered only partially, so that a marksman could see it if he looked straight up the pillar on which it was placed. But to shoot Lakshmana's target, however, it was necessary to aim by looking up and down at the same time, a most impossible feat for any mere mortal. Therefore, only Krishna could strike the target. According to the Acharyas, only those kings who were extremely intent on winning the hand of the princess even dared try to shoot the target. These kings were very physically strong, but they were not skillful enough to find the target. According to the explanation of Sridhar Swami, Arjuna was more expert a marksman than the other kings, but Arjuna's physical strength was not adequate enough to the task of shooting it with perfect accuracy. Each day, the sun passes once through the lunar constellation of Egypt, marking the period most auspicious for victory. As pointed out by Srila Vishwanatha Chakrabarti, on this particular day, the Muhurta of Abhijit coincided with high noon, further emphasizing Lord Krishna's greatness by making the target all the more difficult to see. Sridhar Swami states that Sri Lakshmana was so excited by remembering how she had obtained the Supreme Lord that she forgot her natural shyness and went on to describe her own triumph. Sridhar Swami also comments that the contamination of lust led the kings to quarrel foolishly with Krishna even after seeing Krishna's supreme power. And according to Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti, with two of his four arms, Krishna embraced his new bride, and with the other two, Krishna held his bow and arrows. In the opinion of Vishwanath Chakrabarti, Srimati Lakshmana became embarrassed when she realized that she had been talking about herself, and so she spoke that verse praising her co-wives. In her humility, Lakshmana claimed that Krishna's queens, unlike ordinary wives, could not bring their husband under their control, and thus they could relate to Krishna only as servile housekeepers. However, it is a fact that since Krishna's queens are direct expansions of Krishna's internal pleasure potency, Kladini Shakti, they fully controlled Krishna with their love.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.